Hello and welcome to the Dan Assor Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with event professionals. The Dan Assor Show is supported by headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, an award-winning event registration supplier for organisers of trade shows, exhibitions and conferences. The show's official venue sponsor is conference and exhibition venue Business Design Centre, which has just become B Corp certified, showing its high standards of social and environmental impact. The show is also supported by TF Connect, Tarsus Group, Terrapin and 19 Group. In this episode, my guest is Dalia El-Ghazar, who lives and works out of Melrose, Massachusetts in the USA. Dalia is founder of brand experience and marketing agency, Dalia Plus. With more than a decade of experience in the meetings and events sector, working on both the professional planning side and as an association collaborator, Dalia is known as the coffee-fueled go-to source for trend-setting solutions, event tech news, and professional branding expertise. Dalia has featured in a number of who's who lists in the events industry, including Best Event Tech Evangelist, Event Tech Live 2022, Most Influential Women in Event Tech, BizBash 2021, and Top 25 Women in the Meetings Industry list by Meetings and Conventions magazine. The wide-ranging conversation includes how organisers can get past the fear factor to embrace a new way of creating events and experiences, practical examples of ways organisers can refresh their event, what event marketers should be doing less of and more of, what the future holds for event technology, what she loves about working in events, and some of the biggest lessons Dalia has learned over her career. Hello and welcome, Dalia El-Ghazar. How are you?
Thank you. I am great. How are you?
I'm very good. I was just about to say good afternoon, but of course it's good morning because you are in North America, in Greater Boston. But just tell us exactly where you are.
Absolutely. I'm in Melrose, Mass, which is 10 minutes north of Boston, Mass. And I do not have the accent. I can put it on for you, but no.
I very familiar with Boston. I spent many a fantastic day, week, month. I worked over there about 15 years ago. So it's always good, thank you, to have, from our perspective, international guests to get a flavour from our friends over at the pond. So thank you for joining us today. So, Dalia, we're going to get straight into it. We're going to discuss overall trends and challenges in the events industry today, as they relate to issues, for example, like event design, marketing, registration, possibly business models, professional development. We could probably spend 10 hours talking about that a lot, but we'll try and get through them.
Only on registration, you can spend 10 hours.
On registration, but hopefully there's something for everybody. So we'll skip through a few of them. But I guess I want to start with, the central theme, which is probably going to run through a lot of our discussion. And I know, having looked at your LinkedIn posts, and they're fascinating. For anyone that doesn't follow Dalia on LinkedIn, do so, because she's not devoid of opinion.
No.
In a good way. But there are three words that you speak about a lot, and they are fear of change. So before we get into sort of like the nuances and the detail about events, why do you think this is the case as it relates to event organizers and their teams?
The main reason, I think, obviously, the fear of change is the fear of deviating from your current blueprint or playbook. And I think that post-corona coaster, I will give props and credit to event organizers and event teams that are really trying to push through change. But let's focus on, you know, the reasons why and the actions that happen when there is a current fear of change within an organization or in a team. And it usually comes either from the C-suite, from the top, because they want to, you know, keep the business models as is. They do not do well with the unknown. They do not do well with a change in the sense of, well, what does that do to the bottom line and EBITDA and all of that? And believe me, you know, it is all about the revenue. Sure. But at the moment, you know, that fear of change, when it sort of becomes interwoven within the, I'm going to call it the psyche of the event team, it can actually paralyze them to not change fast enough or not change in ways that will support new events, new creations, new experiences, new content, and new audiences. So when we are working with organizers, it's very apparent, and it's interesting, you know, people will call Dahlia Plus and they would say, come help us with our social media. And when we dig deeper, the business model and the goals are old. Sure. They are, you know, so when you're creating for an old playbook or an old blueprint, doesn't matter how shiny the event tech that you see out there or how great, you know, new content formats are, or, you know, for you to go after or to acquire new audiences, fear will always take priority. No matter how much when someone says, yeah, we want to change, we want to accelerate change, we want to do something different, and they try really hard, and you sort of see the playbook come to version draft number one, you know, like from 1995 or something like that. Yeah. So our biggest issue right now is our biggest launch pad at the same time. You can use fear of change as your like way and catalyst of exploiting the new. With that fear, if you really embrace it, it has to become a mission of the organization.
Sure, and that's really interesting, and I take your viewpoint there. It's not just about I want to make a tactical change to a campaign, or I want to change my social media, or I want to change a little bit in my website. I guess what you're saying is fine, but actually, if, as you call it, and it's an American term, playbook, more than, I guess, a European term, but I think people are used to what you're saying. If the playbook is old and it's ingrained and the culture is not one of, you know, trying things, then whatever sort of little tactical bits and they do is probably going to fail, right? Or not.
Exactly, because yeah. you'll go back to the talent that you have within an organization. The talent fresh or has new perspectives that can actually help you with the change. And the most important thing is, do you trust them? So you have organizations right now, big boxes, like, you know, trade show organizers and even associations that are bringing in young talent, young marketers, sure. Marketers that are B2C, B2B, and they need to be able to blend them within the new strategy. Right. And it's sometimes hard because they butt heads. So sure. What happens is that talent that can actually bring in that change and suppress the fear is being fought internally. If the leadership is not really embracing that factor, it is a huge, huge dilemma. It creates a brain drain within organizations. It creates a brain drain and a trust drain when your audience is coming back to the same old events. So sure. We went through the Corona coaster. That was the biggest fear element that we went through, right? And it tested businesses, it tested organizations, it tested events. And then we came back and we were very proud of saying, events are back. Yeah, they're back. They're back to what they were. So you have those that are trying really hard to change the design, but what they need to also change is the mindset more so than anything. Don't worry about what technology you're going to bring in. Don't worry about, like, you know, even the food and beverage and the AV costs. Yeah, you can worry about that. Yeah. But what you need to design for is you need to design for what your audiences want to have changed. And this is the biggest challenge, is designing events, experiences, and content for your audience and your stakeholders versus you and the bottom line.
Absolutely. And amen to that. And I think it's probably the same as it ever was, right? The customer always being at the center of any business. Hi, I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Just going to take a brief pause to tell you a little bit about the Dan Assel Show headline sponsor, Jonas Event Technology. Jonas Event Technology, or JET, are an award-winning supplier of event registration dedicated to providing event organizers with a seamless registration experience and excellent customer service, as proven by their current NPS score of 71. JET provides a full registration solution for trade shows, exhibitions, and conferences, removing the stress of event registration so that event organizers can focus on making their next event the best yet. Visit jonas.events for more information. You mentioned event design there. I want to get in to talk about event design. I think most people that are organizing events at the moment probably would accept that it's harder than it ever was to get, let's say, a conference attendees to justify attendance. And yes. I think, you know, I'm reading verbatim from a post you mentioned the other day on LinkedIn, you know, working from home, expense, you know, it's difficult to travel. The sustainability mm-hmm. considerations as well. And, you know, the elephant in the room, let's face it, uninspiring conference programs sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, going back to what we did before. So how do we get organizers sort of past that fear factor to embrace a new way of creating events and experiences? And secondly, maybe you've got some practical examples of the way, or sorry, secondly, maybe you've got some practical examples of the ways organizers can refresh their event.
So one thing is, I truly believe one way that organizers can redesign their experiences and their content is when they tap into their attendees' desires. And you can start that in registration if you want. You can start that with an advisory board. I'm not talking committees. I'm Sure. talking going straight to your attendees, your different types of attendees. First timers, millennials, perennials. That's a new term, which I'm trying to figure out what it means.
Which one was that? Perennials.
Yes. So it's not about age. It's about lifespan. It's about health span, right. How healthy they are, which truly makes sense.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Because it does have an impact on event goers.
Sure.
But what you need to tap into is the power of how your stakeholders, exhibitors, sponsors, speakers even, can co-create design, event design with you. And so what happens is if the elephant in the room, which is the big elephant in the room, is the one you named, but the bigger elephant is, do you bring back digital? Do you bring back virtual events, and how boring are they going to be, or how exciting are they going to be and fulfilling for those that do have to stay home, that are caretakers, that have little ones that they can't pay daycare for, that cannot fly anymore, or are sick and tired of sitting in an airport because flights suck right now, you know, all of that stuff. So we have to figure out a better way of taking risks, because this is where event organizers, where they want the same old, they're going to say, oh my God, now I'm in like the risk mode. Yeah. I'm taking risks. If I'm listening to what Dahlia is saying and I'm having a holy shit moment because I'm not comfortable here. I'm not even comfortable giving power to my attendees. But the issue and the challenge is, if you don't have your stakeholders buy-in and they're looking at a program on a website that's from 8 to 5, back to back to back to back with ugly, yucky coffee in the middle, or you're giving them snacks, like, you know, right before a reception that's going to be super loud, super busy, they can't find someone they can hang out with, guess what's going to happen? They're going to look elsewhere. And we've been saying this for a very long time. So funny fact, I had launched with a couple of amazing event professionals in 2016, Control Alt Delete. It's 7 years old. The backstory, real quick, was there was an event, a forum that was supposed to happen in Amsterdam in 2016. Everybody was so excited about it. We were all going to go there. They had about 250 exhibitors. We had an amazing roster of speakers. It wasn't my show. It was a Dutch person's show. I'm not going to name names. 2 weeks out, 4 weeks, no, 4 weeks out, he pulled the plug and he said, declaring bankrupt, we're canceling the show. and everybody was ready to go.
Right.
You had your sponsors, you had your speakers, you had your attendees, all of the good stuff. So four event profs, including myself, were like, you know what? We're going to have a virtual show. And it's going to be called Control Alt Delete. We went through all the, like, are you kidding? In 4 weeks, we could do this. Yeah. So fast forward, we had the show. It was all virtual. We actually had, talk about hybrid. I don't use that word often because it gives me hives, but it was a virtual show. It was, and it had 16 pods around the world where people had watch parties. We're talking 2016.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had more like than 1,000+ people dial in, and it was beautiful. I was looking at the recording because our anniversary came up. We are talking about the same old shit. We're talking about personalize the events. Yeah. We're talking about AI as if it's like a brand new baby. We're talking about like low engagement, high engagement. We're talking about like, you know, how do you spice up, you know, audience interaction and stuff. And I was like, are we kidding here?
Yeah.
Like, we are the strongest industry that bring people together for the sake of change. You're there to change their mind, their behavior, all of it. And why are we having such a hard time with this shit? Like, we are it. We are the shit. We are the shit.
I think I should end the podcast there. So what do we do about it? What do we do about it, Talia?
What the hell? So I'm going to, here's some examples that I've been seeing happen.
Yeah. Give me some recently. Examples.
I'll give you examples. So we have, we do a lot of on-site activations as well as an agency.
Sure.
The mission for that is if we empower the attendees with the understanding of branding and tech and AI, for example, at the show, that's our type of on-site activation, then we can help the event organizer push more interaction, more engagement, more technology to the audiences. And it's fun and it's a value add. 2 weeks ago, literally, or actually last week, a client of ours coming to Boston, she's like, I have some slots available within the program that we're doing in our conference next week. This is next week. And she kept them empty. What she did was she went to the attendees and she's like, what do you want more other than what you see on the program? What do you want more as a value add to you? And they came back and they said, personal branding. We want to know how we can do better. Came to us and she's like, can you do a session and slot it here? So the magic here is you have your registrants. You give them the power, you give them the ask. And they're like, we want to know more about AI, or we want to know more about cooking with I don't know what. You go back and you seek out an expert, even if it's local, and boom, you put it right there within the program. I think that's magic. Now, can it turn an event organizer's hair gray? Absolutely. Because you're talking about last minute logistics, you're talking about agility, you're talking about, like, you know, the marketing around it where it has to be quick, but we're in a quick, you know, era right now. So that's one example. Another example is, you know, not a client, but what I've seen is a redesign of trade show floors. It's a redesign of not only a trade show floor, but it's a redesign of actually labeling your exhibitors. So instead of them coming in and being called an exhibitor, you call them ambassadors, you call them sponsors, you call them, you know, supporters. And the name, even the name changing helps with the biz dev sales, helps with the conversation to an ambassador and saying, what do you want? What do you want to get out of the event? So it's not just write me a check for $25,000, stay in a booth 10 by 10 with really fugly pipe and drape. Pipe and drape should like disappear from our world. It is the ugliest thing ever. It needs to just disappear. And when you think of it, you want a place where attendees not only walk aisles, they walk a journey where they can have an exchange of information, an exchange of content, an exchange of connections. That's exactly what they want. Do the sales later. Help your sponsors sell later. but you can't do it all on the trade show floor. So this is where you need to think of a design that is more connection intuitive, content intuitive. And this is a big ask from big trade shows, because right now, most of the images that you see is like, oh, we're back, our show floor. You can't even walk through it. It's loud. It's amazing. It's, you know, sure. And it's like, okay, is that sustainable? So I'm going to ask you a question. When was the last time you went to a trade show?
Probably back in, what are we now? Sitting here in, well, this is going to go out end of September. So May, I think.
May?
Yeah.
How was it?
Yeah, it was pretty similar to the year before. But, you know, it was still busy. And similar format. I mean, I guess I'm long in the tooth, so change probably, coming back to your point, I probably fear if I turn up at something that was completely different to the year before at my ripe old age of 49, I'll probably be a bit frightened. But yeah, listen, coming back to the point, not a lot had changed, and probably not recognizing the fact that a new demographic are coming into the show as well. You know, the junior.
But did you get out of the trade show what you wanted?
Good question. I went there for a bit of content or for a bit of education, spotted a couple of sessions I liked, spoke to a few suppliers. Yeah, I'd say yes and no. I'd say yes and no. Bit of networking. But whether that's enough for, I would sort of flip it, whether that was enough for the exhibitors that were there. Because I still get the impression the trade shows, you know, the model is stack it high, you know, a bit of smoke and mirrors. Show there's lots and lots of people on the show floor, but they're not necessarily the right type of people that the exhibitors want. And I actually spoke to a few exhibitors, and that's what they said. So it's just as much as about what I'm getting out of it as what the exhibitor's getting out of it. And I think you referenced some of that.
So what you just shared right now is classic, you know, example of, we need to know the audiences better.
Yeah.
I will categorize you in an older audience. You've been to the show before. Yeah. I'm not talking age, Dan. You look marvelous.
Thank you.
What I'm talking about is, like, for those that are newbies, it might not be their cup of tea, sure, to like go around a trade show. So you need to know that, and you need to design accordingly. The other, when you flip the script, you have exhibitors that are first timers that do not know how to navigate a show. They don't know how to talk to attendees. Sure. They don't know how to talk to different types of audience types, for example. And so this is where, create differently. Create a conversation pod. Create a coffee corner for those that want to connect with, you know, their loved ones, or those that they've stalked on social media for a long time, haven't seen them in a couple of years. Would you have been excited or like comfortable if there was like a lounge area,
sure,
where you can have a meetup and a coffee? Or better yet, you know, one of the biggest trends right now, which is not a trend, it should be, where you are facilitating pre-scheduled meetings at your conferences, no matter, yeah, how big they are, no matter how small they are. Pre-scheduled conferences, and I did a report with GRIP on that. Would love to give you the link for it.
Sure.
But basically, it's not only how much revenue it can bring you. What you said was like, were the exhibitors happy? Well, the exhibitors will be happy if they know that they're talking to the right people at the right time.
Sure.
And if it has to be a facilitated introduction, do that. Technology will come in great in handling that, or Sherpas. So you have technology that can help you do it. And you have those that know the show, know the audiences on both sides. Like, for example, I make it a must. I'm a NetWeaver by heart. When I go to an industry show, I always go on the mobile app. I go to the first time attendees. I filter through that. And I'm like, I'm so happy that you're attending. If you need anything, I will be parked on that couch that's in front of room 101. Come talk to me. And I make sure that they are introduced to others. That Sherpas, you need personal Sherpas. I mean, you need people there that act like godmothers and godfathers,
sure,
and mentors,
yeah,
and have them do the exchange. Have them take people by hand to certain exhibitors. You need to talk to Dan because Dan is looking for this amazing podcast technology, and I think you guys would have a wonderful relationship.
You are listening to The Dan Assel Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with event professionals. The Dan Assel Show's official venue sponsor is conference and exhibition venue Business Design Center, which has just become B Corp certified, showing its high standards of social and environmental impact. For more information, visit businessdesigncenter.co.uk. Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Assel.
Yeah, stuff like that.
It's interesting because we talk a lot about serendipity, don't we? And how wonderful it is.
Yes.
But actually, you know, when you come down to brass tacks, don't know if that translates to American. Americanism. But when you come down to brass tacks, people are there to do business. And people are there to get what it shouldn't just be all about, you know, off the cuff and, oh, I might bump into this person or I might find that product. So I think personally, serendipity is overplayed.
It totally is. And actually, I'm not a big fan of the word.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of synchronicity. Okay. I'm a big fan of you synchronize. And this is where you come in pre-scheduled meetings and so forth. You synchronize the introductions. You synchronize the connections. And it's not only the connections between people or buyers and sellers. You synchronize the connection between the audience or the attendees to the type of content or conversations that they would want. Not all content is of value if it's up on a screen and there's a talking head in a breakout session, or God forbid, another plenary session for 90 minutes on a three-story high, you know, stage with an LED, everything behind it. Nobody asked to put $250,000 behind you when you're talking, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Most of the best conversations at an event can be a one-on-one or one-on-five in a little corner at a bar. I don't get the bar scene at some of the biggest trade shows is the scene.
Yeah.
That place should be sponsored. That place should like have a big marquee on it.
Yeah.
Because the best deals and the best conversations happen at the bar.
That's another podcast ender. I like your style.
Yeah, I can give you a couple of them. If you want all podcast endings,
literally,
I can totally.
It's like you say things, I'm like, I can't continue after that. What do you think event marketers should be doing less of? And then conversely, what should they be doing more of?
Event marketers should really tap into their attendees' stories. And use that as part of their marketing. They should tap into, you know, the whole idea of emails is like on hamster wheel. You know, you get emails all the time. What makes it different is don't tell me only about like what I'm going to expect at the show. Tell me what your attendees have gotten out of the show. Or yeah. Being affiliated to your event brand. And there needs to be more storytelling, because I think what we're seeing the trends of is attendees are going to events not only for the conference, not only for the content. They're going for the connections. They're either looking for new friends, new relationships, or new jobs, or new inspiration. So those four things will come if they resonate with tell me a story, or yeah. Dan went to a show, Dahlia watched his TikTok or his Facebook or LinkedIn post, got inspired and wanted to go. And I think event marketers, it's untapped right now.
Yeah.
You have some that are like, you know, putting it or embedding it within their campaigns. And then others are sort of saying it's too much work. I don't know what the end quality is going to be like. It's overthunk.
Yeah.
The so next week is a huge week, not only in America because it's Labor Day weekend. That means the barbecue's on. And that means it's our last hurrah before summer supposedly ends, all of that stuff. Next week, you have three huge, not industry events, but events. You have SASTR and you have Inbound, and then there's a third one. There's been a couple of polls on LinkedIn on where are you going to go. Now, Inbound is the biggest marketer conference, right? SASTR is up there as well. Inbound sold out, I think around 20,000 people. Yeah. Sold out. They put a cap on it. People were saying, you're going to Inbound or SASTR, and why are you going? And the polls were kind of clear. It's like, I'm going to Inbound, and it's for the people.
Yeah.
Because right now, we are creating experiences and events to continue those connections. We need it as people, as humans, we need those connections. You go to a show, and what's the first thing you do before you get to the show? You get to see who you know sure. is going to be at the show. So that's what marketers, I think, can do better at.
Yeah.
Peer-to-peer marketing, I think, is huge as well. Because again, because of those relationships that you have and because of a credibility behavior, you trust if Dan is going to Inbound or going to SASTR, Dahlia is going to follow. So that whole idea of peer-to-peer marketing, I think, is also huge.
Yeah. No, fantastic advice. I think that's absolutely right. Making sure that the people that are attending, that have either attended before or telling you they're going to attend, act as your ambassadors. And then ultimately, also, it's much more cost-effective promotion as well, right? You know, they're the ones that are creating it. So let's embrace it rather than fear again as to how it's gonna look. I'm gonna say two words to you, event tech, and then I'm gonna keep quiet and let you talk.
Don't keep quiet.
Talk to me. I know you're quite opinionated on this. You are, yes. You know, one of the industry gurus, I would suggest. There's been lots
of, I don't know if that's a word.
Well, I've reinvented it. Lots of change happened,
yeah.
Lots of disruption. Give us a view of the future. How are organizers going to use it? How do you think it's going to play out?
There's definitely a lot of consolidation, and to a point where you in a couple of years, you're probably going to see where you're going to have huge players, like big players that have swallowed up, you know, middle-sized big and little fish kind of thing. And that's the evolution. The way organizers or event marketers should evolve with technology is technology should serve them, and it's not the opposite. So it's not that we have to create a strategy or a plan that fits within a platform. And we've been saying this for forever. We have to come to a point where with the evolution that we see with event tech, and yes, I will talk about AI in a hot second, because talk about fear. The biggest fear right now is from AI, but it is the biggest opportunity. where tech plays a role as almost a seat at the table. So not to look at it as a platform, not to look at it as an app anymore. You look at it as almost like a tech strategist, because all tech companies are now turning into strategists. They are designing and creating and showing opportunities, uncovered revenue streams that you can have as part of your event. They are there to say, yes, we can, or no, we can't. And yet we would need another tech to make it happen for you creators. We are all creators, organizers, marketers, all of that. So the tech is evolving, I believe, right now in a very interesting speed. Like I said, control alt delete. When we talked about event tech, we talked about AI, the invisible technology. Yeah. We talked about VR. We talked about pre-scheduling meetings. We talked about mobile apps, and yet we're still doing it. So I think we need to flip the script. The other, where we're not only focusing on what event tech features and benefits and all of that, I think the other factor here is it's blurred lines. It's blurred lines with mainstream tech. You know, it's blurred lines with MarTech. So the landscape of technology has gotten bigger. What happens with that is organizers get more confused. Organizers tend to think it's almost like in Corona Coaster. Oh my God, I have to teach myself 75 different platforms for virtual or else I will fail. Sure. I will lose my job.
Yeah.
So I think right now the beauty of it is even with the speed of technology and the evolution of it that's happening at the moment, we can embrace it as I need someone to sit around the table with me and see my vision, see what I want to create, and then give me the solutions that will make it happen, and then some. Data aside, analytics aside, all of that. That speed is happening because of AI. So when you mentioned, you know, okay, so marketers should have more personalization within their marketing, hell yes, you can do it now with AI-powered platforms, whether it's via video, content creation, ChatGPT, your life away if you want to. But what I'm saying here is you cannot fear having tech be a seat at your table anymore. And so the focus here is also, it is not on you, Mr. or Mrs. Organizer or VP of Events or Director of Programs, to understand all the technology that's out there. It is not your responsibility. It is your responsibility to design different and then have someone else understand what kind of platforms or how do I make it happen for you and report back.
Sure. I was sitting there intently listening. I'm learning a lot. That's good.
But like the thing about AI is it is a holy shit moment.
Yeah.
And it can have organizers and it can have like people in our industry ugly crying, bottle of wine in hand and saying, I'm done. Or it can have someone say, oh my God, I can embrace this. I can go on my own. I can like work 300 miles an hour. Do you remember the series Million Dollar Woman, Bionic Woman and $6 million Lee Majors?
Yeah.
Or is that too American for you?
No. I grew up watching all the American trash.
You were MacGyver, right? You and MacGyver were
Baywatch. I was moonlighting with Bruce Willis.
Moonlighting was awesome.
That really was with Sybil Shepherd. I don't know how I remember this. I can't even remember what I did yesterday.
Willis, I know. Sybil Shepherd. That song is in my head.
That's a whole different thing. Yeah. So I do remember.
So the $6 million man and Bionic Woman, they gave them limbs of steel and of speed. We now have this as event profs with AI and with technology companies and event tech companies that are embracing very quick, very polished ways of doing your events. And you have to take full advantage of it. But I will say, don't spend your brain cells or your brain width on trying to understand features and buttons. It will hurt you in the end, mentally.
No, I agree. I'm just conscious of time. And I've got a couple more things I want to rattle off. So I'm interested in what you said. So about freelancers the other day, I saw a post. So you suggested, Dahlia, that there'd be a huge surge in freelancers and independent contractors, like myself, yes, within the events industry. Why?
A couple of things. They are a couple of reasons. They were within event organizations. The leadership did not give them the space and the ability to rise or shine or like really fought head to head with them. So they got out from under the man, as we say in the States. And they have all the expertise. They know their niche. They know what they're great at. And that's exactly what they offer to the industry. I also think it's a call for, as you know, it's a very stressful job within our industry. I think it's a call for them to say, this is how I want to work. This is what the projects I want to work in. I can fire a client that is not treating me well or my team well. And these are the type of partners that I want to work with. And so these freelancers are not only going and carving their way, they are writing their own job descriptions, which is a huge deal within our organization. There's a lot of organizations that have, like, you know, templated job descriptions. Here, as an event logistics manager, you're going to do this, 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 and this. I've always been at the mindset of, like, if you know what you do and you know what you can do, write your own job description and go back to your management team. Sure. But the freelancers, what they bring to the industry, they bring diversity in the way they can handle different types of clients, not only one, if they were inside of an organization. Flexibility, a lot of times, they do need the respect, as always, as any employee within our industry, but they do need the respect as if they are a consultant. Their price tag should not be questioned. They should not be asked to do stuff that is not on, you know, the project sheet, for example, that they've been contracted for. So I do think there's a big surge. I think there's going to be a huge surge in marketplace kind of platforms as well. So you have, like, Cadre right now. You have Soundings with Tracy Judge, even Vendry with Daphne. She has an amazing Slack channel with, like, 5,200 event profs. And a lot of them are freelancers. And we, as Dahlia Plus Agency, we work with almost 25 plus contractors on different projects. But there will definitely be a surge there.
And Dahlia, what you've been in the industry for a while.
Are you going to age me now? Is this where you ask me how old I am and what kind of cream I use on my face?
I wouldn't normally ask, but I'm sure you probably wouldn't mind answering, but I won't ask you. No. I'm 49, if you wanted to know.
I'm 54.
We both look half our age.
Yes, we do.
You've worked in the industry for many years. What do you love most about working within the events sector?
I love the diversity of the people, our clients, the people that I meet. I love the energy of even the newbies that are in the industry that I meet at industry shows. And, you know, they're all excited. The energy that comes from putting an event together, even an energy of putting a shit show together when you know it's a shit show behind the curtains, but it looks fantastic on the front kind of thing. And what I love the most is I like to be the one minding the gap, no pun intended, between what's happening in the world and tech and all of that stuff, and trying to create a current of you can change, you can do that. So there's a way that I like being that one who pushes people off the edge. And I love, and I just love how experiences come together.
Sure.
Or not. And then you learn, and then you redo and you redesign, and it all works out. It's mostly people driven for me.
Sure. And what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned in not only your career, but life? Let's get deep and meaningful. Looking back, what sort of advice, or what sort of lessons have you learned?
So the biggest lesson is, if you give as much as you can to something or to someone to create change and it doesn't happen, walk away or run away without any regrets, without any, you know, thought of that you failed. There is no failure here. That's the biggest lesson in life. You cannot change someone. And if they keep on their same track, it means that they didn't change. They've stayed on their track. You've Sure. changed. And so that change from you and you walking away is actually a sign of growth.
Yeah.
You might not see it at that time. So that's the biggest lesson. The second lesson is there will always be someone that you will connect with no matter what, but you have to do the first step in any type of room, in any type of Zoom call, in any type of incident. Always reach out to people, even those that you think are out of your realm.
Yeah.
So I have a secret tactic that I do. Every year I put a bucket list of people that I would want to meet off of LinkedIn or celebrities or something. And I put a list together every year and I try to connect with them, no matter if they were like Bezos or I don't know what.
Great.
Depends
idea.
On why I would want to connect with them.
Sure.
And I reach out. And a lot of times I get like the majority of those connections, you know, as a conversation, as like, I just want to say hello, or I just want to see what are you all about.
Yeah.
So never have that thing of I'm going to go in and out of a situation or an event or a networking opportunity that without connecting with anyone new. New is the right word right there.
Thank you. Finally, I know you're involved in the Business of Events Initiative, which are a series of masterclasses.
Yes.
Just talk to us about that.
Sure. Marco Gioberti, who's very well known in the events industry, especially for event tech, as well as the business of events, and Jamie Minton with LeaderPass, created an amazing masterclass, which has 16 CMP units to it. And it has a great roster of guest lecturers. Marco is the host. And it is all about elevating the business of events. It's not about tactics. It's not about like what your subject line on your email campaign should be like. It is truly a masterclass with the element of what you can understand about like acquisitions when it comes to tech or trade show design or marketing or audience retention, for example. And it's pretty impressive. It is like, it's a great, also not only masterclass for any event prof, but for those that want to onboard their new talent within their organizations. So this is a great program for them.
You're going to offer 50% off to anyone that's listening to this podcast. And
yes.
I will pop a code in the description.
Fantastic.
Dahlia, it's been an education. I could definitely sit here and listen to you for a lot longer, but I know you're busy. You've got things to do. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. The Dan Astle Show is grateful for the support of headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, venue sponsor Business Design Center, and event industry supporters TF Connect, Tarsus Group, Terrapin, and 19 Group. Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Astle.